It's 9:15 p.m. in Mitchell, South Dakota, and you're listening to Night Call. Night Call.
Welcome to Night Call, a podcast for your strange days and lonely nights. My name is Emily Yoshida. I am in New York. And with me on the other line, all the way over in Los Angeles, we have
Molly Lambert
and
Oh look at that! Mind melt!
Tess Lynch.
And also the Anglers, Richard Rushfield, on the podcast today. Hello, Richard.
Hello. I want to get in on the and thing.
Yeah, you got it. And you can do an and. Our producer, Roy.
Tess wrote an intro for Richard with information about you.
I mean, I do want to mention, as I mentioned to Molly, and this was news to her, that Richard, you were a producer on one of my favorite shows of all time,
of course.
Blind Date.
The only resume item I have that anyone wants to talk
about. It's so exciting, which means that I am now one degree of separation from Roger Lodge.
You are. You're yeah. Very...
Roger Lodge.
We were close for 2.5 months.
I feel
so
like
fragile.
We could do a whole separate episode just about Richard's experiences on Blind Date.
He signed an NDA is what his face is telling me right
no,
now.
No, I'll tell
You'll
all.
Talk?
Somebody did some kind of tell-all about being on Blind Date recently. Is that what the show was?
Well, they're rebooting like it right now. The new Blind Date is being filmed right now.
The old Blind Date was the best.
It's a timeless format.
Yeah. It was the pop-up video of love.
I saw it being filmed once in Venice Beach, and the couple had run into the ocean naked together, and I asked the PA how it was going, and he was like, well, she took her shirt off. That's as good as it can get.
It was a different time.
So I had this job as a producer on Blind Date where my job was to watch people on dates and make fun of them. And I sat there the entire time saying, like, I'm an artist. I'm a group. It's not even my own name on this. And people think they could rewrite my jokes. And I was just cranky and crotchety. And I walked away from that job to return to journalism. And about 2 seconds out the door, I said, what the hell have I done? don't ever, anytime your principals tell you you need to walk out of a place, just take a few nights of sleep on that.
So you had a diva attack.
Yes.
On Blind Date.
I left Blind Date after one season.
Did you go to the LA Times after Blind Date? Or
no, I went to be a freelance freelance journalist and script reader.
Academy. So. Look, we all made the choice to go into journalism. Once.
I didn't make the choice.
No, we didn't choice.
I maintain my narrative as I never made the choice. The choice made me.
I maintain that too. I agree.
I got out.
I wasn't trying
fast.
To get into journalism. I just accidentally did. And we all, you know what? It's an important thing that people should do.
But advice to millennials,
well,
don't.
Not anything that I do. If I was doing hard-hitting reporting about, like, the city or housing in Los Angeles or something like that, I would be like, you know what? I can't take myself away
movie
from this hard-hitting work.
Movie criticism is useful in its own way. There are things, my feeling about the internet was always, like, people are bored at work and they like having, like, a little thing to read that gives them like a little vacation in their mind from how bored they are at work being on their computer
but
all
day.
But
then that became the entire internet.
Right.
Like that became the model of the entire
We were Candy Crush before Candy Crush.
Exactly.
Yes.
Bring back narrative long form programming like Blind Date.
Yes, exactly. The important stuff, the cultural touchstones.
Well, guys.
Wait, Richard also wrote the book on American Idol, The Untold Story. So now I'm done. But I just have to say, like, Richard is a
That's
very
how Richard and I met.
Oh, my God.
Richard
so
and
cool.
I met while we were in the trenches of Idol coverage circa 2010 or so. And it was around the time the book came out. Yeah. It was not prime Idol time.
It was the kind of on Golden Pond.
It was
Idol
like
time.
The Philip Phillips era.
No.
Didn't you like Philip Phillips?
Very charismatic young gentleman.
What a name.
Absolutely.
Right. Wait.
That's the best looking guy who's ever.
Richard and Emily, do either of you still watch American Idol?
If you want to come and hate a topic, write a book about it. I spent a year with nothing but American Idol in my life, and I don't think I've watched a whole episode since
then. We all know that feeling. Yeah. For sure. Smoke the whole pack.
Exactly.
See how you like it after that. We want to take just a moment to do a night call emotional well-being check-in, because it's been a really awful week, month, year. Just, you know, especially feels bad. So we wanted to say that, like, we would also like this podcast to serve as a place where people feel like it can be a nice bubble bath away from reality. But we also acknowledge that reality sucks right now. And
we hope that in between listening to us talk about ghost hunting, you are making the calls you need to make, both to your representatives and also to the loved ones in your life that might need you right now, and just generally taking care of yourself and the people in your life.
Yeah.
Because.
And taking it offline is the thing we've all been talking about a lot.
Oh, yeah.
In our group text.
Always get offline.
About this is that you gotta, you know, it's fine to be frustrated on the internet, but ultimately that has to lead to action in real life and going to real places, and definitely feels like things will have to happen if other things happen. Right now, I won't go any further than that.
Yep. Also, the week between when we record and when we post is has been, I think, on all of our minds, because there, you know, from week to week, it's years and years and years of garbage news unfolding. But we're recording on Monday, and this is the, you know, we just had the weekend following the Kavanaugh testimony. So yeah, if you are having, as they say, big feelings, we hope that you're taking care of yourself, and we are here to listen.
The world is going to be so much worse by the time this posts.
Dude, like, I know.
Yeah, it's really
what
it's
are we
really
complaining about now?
Or we'll take some buildings over. My feeling is, like, all the people who came out to the Women's March, like, now is the time to come back out and, you know, maybe block off some freeways and stuff. Because society shouldn't function if Kavanaugh gets.
Yeah, agreed.
You know. So that is our night call emotional well-being check-in. And now we'll get back to the demon stories.
I feel better already.
Yeah.
So we wanted to have Richard on not only because he's a great friend and a good talker about all things and worked on Blind Date, but also because I feel like Richard has seen and had more paranormal and or ghost related experiences than maybe anybody else I know. And it just seemed so, like, such a no-brainer. Last time I was in LA, we kind of got to talking about some of his experiences, and I was like, wait, you just have to come on the show and tell everybody.
I've lived a rich paranormal life.
It feels like you won the ghost lottery.
Well,
they'll just keep coming to you.
I'll tell you, it's kind of seek and ye shall find. I went through a long period where I was very interested in ghosts and pretty much asked every person I met everywhere, have you ever seen a ghost? Or alien. I was open to alien stories also and UFO stories. And if you ask everybody you meet, you'll get and I was young, so I was still going out and meeting people and encountering people in my life. You get a lot of good stories, and I think you also open yourself up to a extra dimensional experience in other ways that I'm probably not very. There might be ghosts tapping me on the shoulder all the time right now, and I'm just missing them. But it's been a long time.
When you've opened your heart up as a seeker, in other words, you're
exactly
saying.
without judgment.
I feel like we don't have enough time to go over all of them, which is really saying something. Like, that's impressive in and of itself. But we had a few that we definitely wanted to hear from you, maybe in ascending order of spookiness.
Yeah, maybe we can get some spooky sound effects under this.
Yeah,
like a ghostly wind.
I didn't bring my own, so
you don't. Ooh.
Well, shall we start with the inappropriate ghost?
This
is a pretty straightforward ghost story, but I was back in my college days. I went to school in Western Massachusetts, and at Smith College, which was a neighboring school, there was a house that was a pre-revolutionary house, and every woman that lived there had some sort of experience. They saw things fly across the room. They heard their names said.
Did you say that?
I knew two roommates that woke up in the middle of the night and saw this man standing between their bed, looking down at them.
Shadow person.
My experience in the house wasn't as dramatic as that. I stayed one night in the guest room of this house, and all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I woke up with a start. And just as I woke up, the door to the room creaks open. Doesn't just open a tip, but opens up all the way. And then I feel on my back, with the pressure of a hand, ice cold fingers slowly run down my entire spine, all the way down to the base.
What?
Yes.
And no one was there.
No one.
Did you get up and close the door? Oh yeah, did you hear anything?
It was about three in the morning. It was a very cold night. My house was about 2-3 miles away, and I got up and walked home through the snow. Those 2 or 3 miles after that. I'm not the person that stays in the Amityville house after
you
the pig
out
appears.
Of there.
No, yeah.
Jeez.
I left. What does it mean? What's the significance? I can't say. But
yeah, what do you think they were trying to tell you?
You said it was a desirous back rub.
Lascivious intent was my takeaway. That was how it felt to me. It did not feel like a kind of just friendly pat on the back.
So you felt violated? It was a creepy back rub.
Throw in paranormal creepy back rub and see how you like that.
Well, you know, it could be if some person might be into it, they might be like, "Ooh, a free back rub."
could be the beginning of a teen like YA novel.
A free massage. Yeah. There's like some people who have had consensual sex with ghosts. I think maybe
That's impossible.
Brigitte Nielsen, I want to say.
But how does she know it's consensual?
Because a ghost tried to have sex with her, and she was like, "Ooh la la,
cool."
Ooh la la.
I don't know that this ghost had unpleasant hands. I mean, I think it was strong, powerful hands. Ice cold, yes, but
when
powerful.
When you let someone access your back for a back rub, it's so close to your neck, they can throttle you.
Yeah, it's true. You got lucky.
Oh, that gives me the creep.
Let's move on.
But
to
wait,
the
there's more.
So story number two.
Second date with a ghost.
We're in college still. My friend of mine, Sam, had his mother had a ranch out in Malibu where she had a Brazilian mystic visiting. And we went, we drove out to see this Brazilian mystic. The story has two parts. What they have to do with each other, you be the judge. But it doesn't seem that they are unrelated. This Brazilian mystic, we get there, he's an older gentleman, probably about 60. He's sitting there drinking a beer and smoking cigarettes. And doesn't seem that holy, but he takes us into this room one at a time, and we lie on a bed, and he walks around the room sort of huffing and puffing, and it's like little flash bulbs come out of him in like purple or green or different colors. And he did that, and I said, "Well, Maurizio, what was that about?" And he said, "Oh, good for the nervous system," which was the only explanation he had. And then after we all had done that, we were sitting outside sort of at this table, and there are about 10 of us there, and Maurizio said to one of the people, he said, I think I feel something out in the field. You come with me." And they walk out to the field, and they're walking. They're about 100 yards off, and we just see them because every time he steps, sparks come out from under his feet.
What?
This is what happens when you're a mystic.
Yeah.
And they get to a place 200 yards away or something, and all of a sudden this huge burst of light comes out of Maurizio's chest, and you can sort of see him illuminated. And immediately after, in the sky, this gold orb, picture the harvest moon, about 50% larger than that, blinks on in the sky and then blinks off. Then about 15 seconds pass, and another huge flash of light comes out of Maurizio. And then the gold orb flashes on and flashes off. And that happens a couple dozen times over the course of about 10 minutes. And then Maurizio comes back, and we say, "Maurizio, that was amazing. What was that?" He says, "Oh, I didn't see anything. I don't know." So that was our explanation. So we are driving home from that. Here, we'll get to, so that was the extra dimensional mm-hmm. part. Someone there suggested he had opened up a portal to another dimension. Maybe Maurizio didn't confirm that, but given what's coming, you may look back on that as a credible explanation. We're in Sam's Bronco, driving down Sunset, driving eastbound, and we just passed Rustic Canyon, and we're approaching what you folks who grew up around here know as Dead Man's Curve. You know that big curve.
Yeah.
So we're going into that. And all of a sudden, the power to Sam's car just dies.
It right at Dead Man's Curve?
As we're approaching it, we're about 150 yards out. We're approaching it, and the power is just gone. It's just like, it's just as though someone just turned it off. And we're coasting to a stop. Up ahead of us, going westbound, coming towards us, this car comes screeching around the curb, spins out, does a 360, and crashes into a phone pole. Yes, exactly where we would have been.
What?
The exact spot where we would have been had the power not gone out.
Holy shit.
So are those two halves of the story related?
So it was a good portal then.
Well, yeah, maybe a good, maybe. Or maybe it was a demon with bad aim.
Or maybe it was Hitler driving the other car and he was being saved to go.
Hitler didn't die on Dead Man's Curve.
The next
this is also weird you say this because I spent like a week reading about Jan and Dean. This is all I would talk about last week before the podcast.
Well, you know where that curve actually is
in Beverly Hills. Right?
But have you actually seen? That's the lamest Dead Man's Curve. That curve is like sort of just like a
I always imagined it.
I'm confused which one you're talking about. What is it? Is it like near Beverly Glen or something?
No, between Rustic Canyon and the Riviera Palisades.
But it's a pretty. A pretty baby Dead Man's Curve.
Yeah,
right.
That one is the one I was at was a major Dead Man's Curve. The Jan and Dean one is on. It's right. Jan and Dean one is interesting because it's about three doors down from the house Bugsy Siegel was shot in.
Huh.
So it's an interesting little neighborhood there.
I told Tess I was reading about Jan and Dean, and she was like, "Oh, because one of them was hot," and I was like, "Yes, correct." And then I found
hard to remember which one.
Well, I found out that they were. You probably know this already, Richard, but that they were all on the football team at like Hollywood High. That's how they became a group, and that the other guy in the group was James Brolin.
What?
They were the football team. Because I just thought they were going to be dorks. And then I was like, wait, Jan and Dean were hot?
No,
and then
it was like
they were football players who harmonized in the locker room.
Don't ever go look at that curve. You're going to be so let down.
Well, then also one of them was in a car accident later, but not at that Dead Man's Curve, but like not too far from there.
Well, that's where the accident was, where the real life accident was. That wasn't the they were conflated later.
I always imagined it being like in Palos Verdes on like a little twisty like canyon.
I always assumed it was on Mulholland until I knew better because Mulholland is just one big Dead Man's Curve. to be honest with you.
That is the one. In the Palisades is a true people are killed all the time.
Can we get another demon story?
Yeah, number three. So
That was not the one that I thought you were going to tell. So I'm very curious. I remember you telling me at Italy was about, it was like somebody said that you had opened up your soul to a ghost flood or whatever.
The Ouija board one was a story that was a very good story. It didn't actually happen to me. It had to happen to a bunch of friends of mine.
You should tell it anyway because it's the perfect ghost story.
Is this the one I'm thinking of, though? I can't remember.
Find out.
So if you go to the Brand Library in Glendale, there's a path. If you go there at night, there's a path that leads up into the hills behind it. And if you go, you go up, you walk up that path about 15 minutes, and you'll see a small little trail that goes off it. And you'll notice when you go down the trail that the temperature suddenly drops. And you come to a wrought iron gate enclosing a pyramid. Way up in the mountains, there's a pyramid. There's a stone pyramid about, let's say, about 15, 20 feet high in the hills above Glendale. It is the Brand family, and I believe the Brand family built Glendale there.
Have either of you guys been there?
It is so spooky. Have you been there?
No, I haven't.
Oh, when you come soon, we will go. There's a pyramid is what we're going to get to.
Yes.
I've heard of it, but I've never been there. Yeah.
I was driving around Glendale one day, and I, like, found it. And I was like, where did this come from? It was totally, like, a spooky place that was suddenly planted there that I'd never noticed before. And it has, like, the library building is this sort of fake Moroccan-style building, and it was apparently built by the person who built the Chicago World's Fair.
Ooh.
And then it inspired a lot of the sort of fake Spanish stuff in Glendale because it was like, you know, a fancy person's building. And other people were like, build me a little Spanish villa also. But it looks very like a weird movie set. It has like some, and everybody I know who goes there says it's like the weirdest place.
Yes. And this is how weird it was for my friends, four of whom went there and told me the story together and swear by it. So you go there at night and the gate is closed, so you have to climb over it. And they came in and they brought a Ouija board. So they climb over it, they feel very weird, they sit down, they put the disc on the Ouija board, and it just starts spinning by itself. It starts spinning wildly. And then they are in their car on the freeway driving home.
Just like a time leap?
They all lost the time in between.
Yes.
Did
they get rid of the Ouija board?
I don't know if the Ouija board was with them still. Interesting.
That's what I
it might
know.
Still be there.
Yeah. I'll go get it, you guys.
Let's go. Or let's just bring another one.
Was that the Ouija board? So I have another was that the one you were thinking of or were you thinking of?
No, that wasn't the one I was thinking of either.
Oh.
That was the one
I
heard.
The other one is quick. I was at a haunted coffee shop and
which haunted coffee shop?
The All-Star Cafe that used to be in the Knickerbocker Hotel, in front of which D.W. Griffith died.
Okay.
I think the hotel has been bought by Scientology now, and the cafe doesn't exist anymore. But
wait, is it the one where they used to have a lightly Star Trek-themed coffee shop in that space called 10 Forward?
Possible. The All-Star Cafe was a brief incarnation there and never quite came together. But They claimed it was very haunted, and they had a Ouija board, and my friend and I were playing with the Ouija board, and the boards started telling us things, horrible things were going to happen to our friends. It was spelling very. It was the quickest a Ouija board has ever worked for me. It was saying like one friend of hers is going to die in a car accident, and other, it was like, but it was kind of like jokey, horrible things, but. We asked him who he was, and he said he was a 9-year-old boy named Max, and he spelled that. And as we were leaving, we said to the owner, he says, "Did you get anything on the Ouija board?" I said, "Yeah, someone was really going crazy." He was like, "Oh, was it Max, the 9-year-old?"
What? But wait, were a ton of people bringing Ouija boards to the coffee shop? Did they
there
have
was
a
never
Ouija
a
board
ton
there?
Of people in that. They had a Ouija board there.
Oh, yeah. It was their house Ouija.
So it might have been.
Weird.
That's crazy.
Yeah. At around the time that happened and talking to my friends with their Brand Cemetery experience, I was at a group dinner, and there was this old Native American gentleman.
This is the story I think that you told me.
It was sort of a shaman type, self-styled shaman, but and a lot of people held him in very high regard. But I started chatting about these ghost experiences, and he looked at me and he said, "You shouldn't be fooling with this." And I was like, it's just having fun with the work. Kids will be kids. What are you going to do? And he kind of looked. He was like looking in the space around me. And he's like, "You're opening yourself up to the spirits." And I said, "Well, they're welcome to come visit. I don't have anything against them." He looked at me more and he slammed his fist down. And he was like, "No, you are a coffee cup. Your coffee cup is empty. The spirits are coffee. That coffee wants to be in a cup."
Whoa.
Was this David
Lynch?
That
is what you're doing. It may have been.
Didn't you say, I also did hear a story. Didn't you say that you had also just been like messing with some sort of like
Or like a coven? No, it was when you went to go, you were doing research on the real covens of Hollywood, because wasn't this around the time of The Craft or something?
It was around the time of The Craft, yes. And okay. I wrote my first cover story in journalism. maybe my first feature story for Black Book magazine about witches in Los Angeles. So I went to visit a coven in North Hollywood. Don't let them tell you that they all have that stuff out there. Like, oh, we don't cast spells to hurt people because everything you do comes back to get you three times. It's they cast plenty, believe me.
Did they cast one on you?
Possibly after it came out.
You opened the barrier and
uncorked
then you can't.
The coffee.
Well, the one thing I've used is they taught me a lost things spell, how to find lost things.
Can you share? It's not St. Anthony. St.
No.
Anthony
yeah,
works,
Tess
by
has
the way,
a, has a Catholic
Anthony.
One.
Yeah, you
got
to do St. Anthony.
She taught me, and we both do all the time.
It works.
I don't know. If you say a spell on the radio, does that dissipate its power, or like does that? Does that Emily? You've done my lost things spell.
You've told it to me over. Yeah,
I think
you told
I don't
it to me over
know.
GChat, so I don't feel like it's that much more sacred.
I think I cheat. I'm afraid of the.
Can you outline it without telling us like the words that you chant or anything?
So you think you picture yourself finding it, and you do something to an object of clothing,
uh-huh.
and then leave it in a certain place. Until
Has it worked
every time?
Huh. Really?
Miraculously, yes.
All right, I'll get the notes afterwards.
Guys, what are your personal scariest moments from horror movies?
Oh, yes. I have one that I watched just before I got here, and it's been giving me the creeps ever since, which is from the 1978, I think, remix of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where it's been a while since I've seen the movie, but I remember the scene of the dog with the man's face.
Oh, God,
and the banjo
yes.
music that oh, happened.
That's terrible. That was the scariest part of it.
It's so scary because the man is like licking his mouth in a way that looks like a dog, and everybody's reactions are like really realistic to
it's
that.
It's never explained how that happened.
Never explained.
That they got it's the only one that got mixed up.
Exactly. Yep.
It's the scariest movie.
It is a very scary movie, but that's the scariest part.
I never feel safe in San Francisco because of that movie.
That
movie also now is like sad because it's all like beautiful pre-gentrification, mm-hmm. like real San Francisco. You're like, ooh.
It got city snatched.
Yeah.
Emily, totally. Do you have a scariest movie moment?
I'm so bad at this one. I've been honestly thinking about it since you guys posed the question. And I sound like a broken record when I talk about this, but like there aren't that many movies that really scare me, but there are ones that like kind of
what about animated movies? I feel like some of the scariest things that have ever scared me have been
really?
In like anime that I saw as a child.
Well, I think that one of the scarier things, Princess Mononoke, like the face on the deer spirit. I always confuse it with the Patronus from Harry Potter because it's like very similar the way it's presented, but it's like this deer spirit in the water, but it has a human face. There is something very eerie about human faces on animals.
Yeah, that's what we all think is the scariest.
Yeah. I mean, I just in general, like mask-like faces are very terrifying to me. I've been more scared. Like, my closest thing that I have to, like, a paranormal experience or, like, one of Richard's stories is that I used to play this game called Four Doors with, like, friends growing up. Like, since I was in, you know, middle school or something, it would be a sleepover game. Like kind of like a light as a feather, stiff as a board type thing. Do you know this game?
No.
Uh-uh.
Oh, it sort of takes a while to explain, but basically it just like you guide your friend through who like one person is lying down in the middle of the group and you guide them through like kind of a semi-conscious like journey through a hallway with these doors. And the one that I remember doing or like saying and like everybody in the room just freaking out is like walking into one of the doors and it was just like a room like a full of people wearing like blank masks. And they all like turned around and stared at me.
Oh, that's scary.
See?
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Yeah, that's like the scariest thing to me. So anything with masks in movies.
Yeah, stuff in like, I mean, like this isn't even movies, but like, yeah, like some of that just conceptual stuff in like Junji Ito just like scares me more
Junji
than anything.
Ito, Junji Ito doesn't really, I delight in Junji Ito. Like I find it so fun.
You like
and
body
makes
horror?
Me feel so gross and fun. Like yeah, like all like you know, I don't know. It does. It feels more like a grotesque form of comedy to, mm-hmm. than like actually getting scared to me. But I love it.
Sometimes when it moves into comedy, that's the scariest, I think, to me. Because like I was always very freaked out by 80s practical effects stuff. It took mm-hmm. me forever to watch the Nightmare on Elm Street movies because I was so scared of like Freddy as just as like a scary looking thing. And like masks of Freddy are so scary to me, I think, still more so than Michael Myers, even though he's a scary blank face.
Mm-hmm. It's a William Shatner face.
Yeah. Richard, what's your scariest movie moment?
So the one scene in movies that as I get older, I'm scared. I'm like, I cry in Hallmark commercials, but they also scare the hell out of me. So I'm scared of everything now. And really can't watch scary movies anymore. Mm-hmm. But the scene in Poltergeist where the girl's talking to her mother in the kitchen, and then they're at the kitchen table and they look away and then they turn back to the kitchen table and the chairs are stacked.
The stacked chairs is so fucking scary. Poltergeist is like such. Molly's never seen
I've
Poltergeist.
I've never seen Poltergeist.
Poltergeist is one of the scariest movies because it tricks you into thinking it's a different kind of movie at certain points.
That's what The Exorcist was like. I was like, ooh, a 70s movie that's about like families.
Yeah.
And spend $1 billion on effects. You won't get anything scarier than these damn kitchen chairs stacked on top of each other. It's like,
agree. Friend of the podcast, Mukta Mohan, has talked about how her biggest fear is like furniture being moved around while she's asleep.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. The little
because
things.
It's really the fear of being insane.
Guys, do you want to take?
I stepped on your segue.
The yellow wallpaper. Let's take a night email from Brian. I wanted to draw your attention to this Vox interview with a pair of Harvard Divinity School researchers who published a paper in 2015 that suggested that millennials are substituting CrossFit and SoulCycle for traditional organized religions. I know you have a particular affinity for the occult, and while this may be its exact opposite, it may hold some interest for you for that very reason. It feels like another instance of new businesses filling the vacuum created by the loss of old institutions. Guys.
Well, as a person who's, as I was saying, my favorite hot take on everything is, it's church! I feel like I've heard this at least said casually by people who have, you know, who subscribe or don't subscribe to this particular religion, especially for SoulCycle.
Well, you were saying you just got ClassPass.
I did, yeah. I have been out of the group fitness world for a while, which I was very into in Los Angeles and kind of stopped doing as much here. And it's very interesting to come back to it.
Like, has anyone in this room tried, what is it called? Like SoulCycle?
I've done SoulCycle. I haven't done CrossFit.
I was forced once.
You were?
One time.
But what did they play?
Oh, God. It was horrible. I mean, it was it was dark. Like, we were coached.
It should be dark.
Did it remind you of being in church because you were like, get me out of here?
No, church is better for me than that because it hurts so badly to sit on that sharp seat. And I had the gel cover that I was like, look, I'm not like a pro. I'm not going to sit on like a chair that feels like a knife. So I got like this gel cover. But even then it was so horribly painful that it feels like punishment to sit and like your legs hurt so bad. And they were, I mean, to me, I have a hard time with someone like coaching you through feelings.
That's
like,
very
it's
churchy,
very
though,
alienating
to be like,
to
and is. Also to be like, it's painful, but you have to do it.
But it's like the part of it is forcing your body to like release these endorphins that force you to feel. It feels manipulative to me. But
it
that's
is
just
manipulative.
Me. This is just me. I only exercise alone, if ever.
Well, I want to say that I've never done one of these group ones, and I really only learned about how churchy it was from seeing the movie I Feel Pretty with Emily, which is framed around SoulCycle. Mm-hmm. I guess also on Broad City they like do a parody of it, but I sort
they're
of
like
got
at a fake Equinox. Yeah,
yeah, which, I got that.
Which
it's like
Equinox
a,
has that vibe.
It's
too.
Like a combination life coaching and exercise class.
People get obsessed with it. I don't know if you guys have followed Ben Dreyfuss's journey with SoulCycle. He wrote about it at Mother Jones.
No, I've known some people who get really obsessed with bicycling.
Yeah, but this is different. What do you feel about it, Richard?
As much as I fear a demon strangling me to death in my sleep, I even more fear someone ever speaking to me while I'm trying to exercise.
Exactly.
Religion should be between you and your SoulCycle trainer and private, and should not be done in the presence of other people.
Agreed. But I get it.
The thing that's crazy that I've realized about these classes, like, and this sort of has to do with the religion thing, but it's also like, I think maybe because this idea of, you know, like these sort of abusive cycles and stuff have been so much in the public discourse lately, and especially like how, like abuser logic and stuff, that I started to realize that a lot of the classes are kind of structured like you're in an abusive relationship.
Yes.
With yourself. because, and especially like I've been going to like Physique 57 and bar classes and stuff, and the language they use is really like, we're just gonna burn out this glute or whatever. We're gonna like do it till you kill it, kind of. And then and then at the end, or like in between all these like intervals of really, really intense exercise, and then you like are like, you know, spinning, and then they do a stretch, and they're like, honor your body. Your body is beautiful, and it's what has brought you here today to give you this gift. And it's like,
yeah, that sounds like triumph of the will, and I cannot roll.
Wait, Emily, what do you get out of, like, what is it that draws you to this?
Well, lately I've just been like, I've been doing stuff by myself for a very long time now. And I had a personal trainer for a while when I was making more money. And now I just kind of fuck around at YMCA. That's about it.
You also have
jog.
A friend, Leslie Moon, who is a personal trainer, weightlifting coach, who's so cool because she does it in the opposite way of
she's like the best at kind of the more holistic, like a sane.
I love her vibe, because it's like, I'm gonna teach you the safe way to pick up the heaviest thing you can.
And being around her and like kind of picking up a lot of the stuff that she's been learning, and like kind of this sort of philosophy she's been honing, then going back to this very I feel pretty-esque form of exercise feels especially like a culture clash. But I have to differ from you guys. I like stuff in
you
a
like
group.
You like somebody yelling at you.
I do like somebody yelling at me. I mean, I've had some amazing experiences with SoulCycle at South by Southwest. It is a total kink. I will own up to that. But like, I've never really gotten hardcore into SoulCycle before. But at South by Southwest, they do like, they'll have like guest DJs, like famous, like Hudson Mohawk, like guest DJed.
I could also see needing to just like sweat your brains out in that situation to stay sane.
Yeah. Oh, it smells like beer.
When you see people that were in your SoulCycle class somewhere else, do you feel like you have a spiritual bond with them?
I always feel like you just don't acknowledge it. It's like you all went to an orgy or something. And yeah,
or like AA or something.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I guess I could
do like
gone. That's
subtle,
like a better metaphor.
A subtle like head tip, but
exactly.
Like don't play like, your, mm-hmm. don't show your hand.
Yeah.
There's something about workouts where it's like, I don't know, I like a gentle cult leader, but my personal favorite is Yoga with Adrian on YouTube, which I've probably plugged before. But like, if you want the opposite vibe of somebody yelling at you, of someone who's like Sesame Street, just being like, stretch whatever's good for you.
She's so wishy-washy though, man. I need a little more
want
discipline.
Than
that.
No.
Like, if you were just sitting there, she'd be like, it's fine. You can just sit.
I've done like the shred also, and I didn't like Jillian Jansen yelling at me. Yeah. I was like, no, I'm not a jock.
So I feel like I was just in Los Angeles and Tess was just in New York. We've been so bi-coastal.
I know.
These last
we're
few
like
days,
the Kardashians.
Yeah.
We have franchises all over the
it's
country.
True.
We're taking New York and
we're open in Night Call Dash.
New York and, yeah.
Night Dash.
Night Dash. But I'm going to be back in LA soon. I think when you hear this, it'll be like a week later. Yeah. For the first ever Female Filmmakers Festival in Los Angeles, which I'm super excited to be a part of. I'm going to be doing a couple panels there, and you should definitely check it out and get tickets at fffest.org.
Yeah, Emily will be there, and I will also be there. Maybe Tess will be there. Who knows?
Never know where I'll be.
Wild card.
I am.
I am going with my mom to see a documentary called Left on Pearl that is about the 1971 takeover of a building by women in Boston. They took over a building that Harvard was like trying to buy up a lot of working class neighborhood housing in Cambridge. And so a bunch of women took over a building and turned it into an affordable women's health center. And obviously that's something that I think is really
goals.
Cool and would like to learn how to do more of stuff like that. So,
It's a really amazing program. It's not, I think they have one premiere, but the rest is just kind of a really good selection of both stuff that you might have seen. Like they have American Psycho there, Mary Harron's American Psycho. They have Treeless Mountain, which is like one of So-young Kim's earlier films, and like some Barbara Hammer shorts.
Yeah, it's a great program.
It's just like a really good mix and like international too. And I think it's going to be a cool weekend. It's at the Downtown Independent in Los Angeles.
And this is the weekend of the
12th through the 14th.
The 12th through the 14th in LA at fffest.org.
The 12th through the 14th of October.
Yes, it is.
Halfway to Halloween.
Halfway. We almost made it. And now that Richard's here, you feel that Halloween creepy vibe. His coffee cup of ghosts.
Good luck out there, everybody.
Your coffee cup overflowing.
Exactly.
Do not fill your coffee cup with ghosts.
No, you got to put one of those lids on it with a little tiny hole so only the really important ghosts can come in.
Well, it's been good the last 10 years or so, because 10, 20 years, because I haven't been messing with it, so I haven't felt it and haven't been spreading these stories around until now. So maybe next year I can check.
Welcome to the coven, Richard.
Yeah, watch out for those chairs stacking.
Yep.
If any chairs are stacking in your home, give us a call and tell us about it at 240-46-NIGHT.
Or you can email us at nightcallpodcast@gmail.com. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please review, rate, and subscribe.
And be sure to check out Richard's newsletter at theankler.com. And also follow us on social media. We're on Twitter at Night Call Pod, Instagram at Night Call Podcast, and Facebook at Night Call Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Richard.
My pleasure.
Thank you. And we'll see some of y'all at the Female Filmmaker Fest. Bye. Come back soon.